Sales Enablement Society, Stories from the Trenches, where enablement practitioners share their real-world experiences. Get the scoop on what's happening inside sales enablement teams across the global SES member community. Each segment of Stories from the Trenches share the good, the bad, and the ugly practices of corporate sales enablement initiatives. Learn what worked, what didn't work, and how obstacles were eliminated by corporate teams and leadership. Sit back, grab a cold one, and join host Paul Butterfield, Vice President of Sales Enablement at Instructure, for casual conversations about the wide and varied profession of sales enablement, where there is never a one-size-fits-all solution.
Welcome to another episode of Stories from the Trenches, the Sales Enablement Society podcast, where folks that do what we do come and share the successes that they're having and maybe some of the challenges and what they're doing to work through those. I'm very excited to introduce our next guest to you, and welcome to the podcast, Lish Gates.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Paul. It's a pleasure.
Well, we're excited. So I'd like to start off, you and I spent a few minutes talking earlier today, and you have an interesting career arc. Spent a number of years in radio, and now you're seeing a lot of success in sales enablement. So as part of introducing yourself, I'd love to hear that story, maybe let everybody know a little bit about you, and maybe a little bit about what Algolia does.
So, yes, spent a lot of time in radio. It was really, honestly, I have a huge passion for music. And so I wanted to be somewhere in that realm of entertainment business and media really kind of drew me in. I was selling advertisements for a little while in radio, and I moved into a sales ops role. Out of frustration, the situation was that I wanted things to be more efficient, and I didn't understand why we were doing certain things that way. And it kind of became like a morph of sales operations and sales enablement without me actually really knowing that I was doing sales enablement at the time. And 6 years later, I made the jump over to Algolia, and have been building out the sales enablement function from scratch, which has been super exciting. Algolia is a search as a service technology company, and it's actually really cool to be in an industry where you're connecting people to what they're looking for. So it's an exciting industry to be in.
All right. Thank you. Now we're going to have a little bit of fun. We'd like to kick off maybe just before we get into the serious questions, I have a couple of fun questions. So here's the first one that you and I were talking about. What is the most embarrassing fashion that you've rocked in your life?
Oh, Lord. It's probably one of two things. It's either the MC Hammer pants. I did rock those for a little while.
Nice.
Or fishnet stockings from my rocker days.
Very cool. All right. And a little more serious. What are you most curious about right now?
Honestly, I mean, given the current situation with this pandemic, I'm really curious to see how we evolve coming out of this. So I think I'm just kind of watching, and just on a fun note as well, I'm wondering what new hobbies people keep after COVID, after this isolation lockdown is over.
Hopefully less Netflix and more real hobbies, right? All right.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So a great segue, given the current condition with COVID-19 and the fact that our sales teams, our entire workforces are working remotely, many of them for the first time. Of course, enterprise sales reps, this isn't new for most of them, but it is for a lot of others, SDRs, account executives, et cetera. How are you establishing routines that build successful reps and also successful new hires?
Yeah, COVID-19 has rolled in a fog of uncertainty. And, you know, for new hires especially, it's the last thing you want impeding in your onboarding process. So the remedy I've found so far has been to provide a really clear path and a plan, and show and don't just tell. So I do it for a number of ways. I basically show a full high-level overview of how we're going to commit to making them successful in their new role. And then for all of our other employees as well, just having a really established program, I think, is step one. But then I create a number of digital routines that seem to be working really well. Having those Slack channels for new hire classes, but also for ongoing enablement classes, allows us to do check-ins, updates, give feedback loops. Also, sometimes, you know, inviting in a guest like a VP or a C-suite member to give new employees some welcomed love. So that's one of the things that we've done. Another thing has been creating digital office hours, so for Q&A. So we start a document, just a Google Doc, if you will. We get our Q&As put in there by our new hires or by some of the other, depending on the class, we'll also have like a doc separated out for that if there's any ongoing questions. And then we create that office hour where they can come and join weekly, and we can review the questions and share the answers. So that's also been working really well for us as well. There's a few other ways as well. We've done calendar time slots. Those are really sometimes, you know, for new hires, creating a good routine comes with sometimes giving them some suggested deadlines or suggested time to get things done. And so sometimes we'll block off that calendar time for them just as a reminder that, hey, here's what you should do in this time based upon what we've seen other reps do that have made them successful. And then the last and final piece is kind of really creating that accountability partner. So, you know, buddying up with people, having that mentorship program, that accountability. It's just a way for us to have like good check-ins. They can practice mock scenarios depending on what we're teaching, and allow them to shadow real life work scenarios wherever possible. And that seems to be working really well.
I love all of those. There's a couple I'd like to unpack if you're okay with that. The one with creating Slack channels for feedback loops, I've heard that before, but what I haven't seen or heard is adding select VPs or C-suite members. That's a great idea. How are you seeing that work, and how do you get that engagement? Because I could see potentially a new hire maybe, you know, not feeling like they want to engage an executive. How do you get everybody communicating?
Yeah, so I think it's just to have that exposure that sometimes we would have normally in our onboarding process. You know, normally there would be like a session where we would have one of our co-founders talking about values, or, you know, our CRO would come in and join one of those onboarding classes. So because those aren't as easy to do, especially with time differences, we created an opportunity for them to join these private channels just to say a quick hello, ask any questions, but also to show that like they see them and that they care. Because I think a lot of the hardest parts of the situation is that, you know, normally you would have that coffee or water cooler chat with one of those kinds of VPs or C-suites when you're getting the coffee in the morning at the office. But the reality is when everyone's working from home, they don't get that interaction like they normally would. So it's a casual setting for them to interact, which it seems to be working really well.
I'm curious, is there one Slack channel that everyone uses while they're ramping, or do you create a channel for each cohort? Because again, when you and I were talking, it looks like you've got some rather large classes even recently that have gone through.
Right now, what we've done, we've actually put all of the new hires in one class, like Slack channel, because we try to bring them together as much as we can. Because otherwise, if we just did one role versus another, I think it would be too small and they already feel alone. So the bigger we can make that cohort and that friendship and that group, the better, I believe.
Okay. The other one you mentioned, because I've seen variations of doing this, so I'd love to see talk about how it's working for you guys. And that is creating accountability partners. You know, it's a buddy system or mentoring and whatever you decide to call it. Would you maybe talk a little bit more about that? Because one of the challenges that can happen is finding folks that are both willing to do that, but also giving them enough structure so that it's, you know, you have a little bit of sense of what the experience is, or maybe you disagree, maybe you don't need to do that. And they're also trying to hit their own sales number. How do you balance all of that in a successful partner program?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So we give them quite a structured path as to like how we would like them to mentor and practice. So we basically have like for an AE's role, for example, in their second, third, fourth week, they have two different mock call scenarios that they'll go through where we give the script to the AE that's mentoring the new hire, you know, the kind of role we want them to play as the customer, and then kind of let the new hire go through that simulation. So it is pretty guided, but it allows us to make sure that we're creating something that's scalable and measurable, and we know that A, it's either working or we'll get the feedback that we need to change it. If we kind of leave them to do whatever, it's not as scalable and it's not as repeatable.
And that is always the challenge in what we do is, you know, because once you've figured it out and you've got a good system, mm-hmm. then how do you repeat it and as you say, scale, especially when, during growth periods?
Yeah, exactly.
What are some of the best practices that you have found really benefit the folks that you're bringing in, or even your existing reps, when you're getting them ready to go into a virtual online training? How do you help them prepare?
Yeah, so it really depends on the type of session that we're doing. So for some of the onboarding classes that we do, we have pre-work or a pre-reading. We have quite a technical product. And so depending on if it's, something to do with the product before we go into the session, we'll make sure that they kind of understand the basic concepts, the basic value prop. And then that way, when they come into the session, it's really interactive. And we do the same thing for our ongoing enablement classes. So recently we just did OEM pricing, which can be quite a dry topic to go through.
I can't wait.
We just had slides. So we try to make it as engaging as possible and make sure that they understand, what to look for in a deal and the kind of, how to create that evaluation criteria. And we do that online first. And then that way, when we're bringing them to do like online training, it's really for them to go and practice, go into breakout rooms and sessions. And so I think that's really important for any training, to be honest, but especially for online training, because the last thing you want is to be the one talking the whole time while you've got slides going on. It's just, that's not fun for anyone.
No, it's not. We can all read slides. Thank you. We don't need,
yeah, exactly.
We don't need that, but yeah, we've all been in those meetings, right? So I spent a number of years in the Microsoft channel, and we were hosting, it was a brand new Microsoft product for SMB. This was some years ago. Big announcement. We had brought about 300 partners, Microsoft VARs and partners together on this call. And this presenter was, if you looked up monotone in the dictionary, I'm pretty sure his picture would be there. And he really had no idea. And he was just doing what you just said, just reading his slides, and they had a lot on them. So partway through, and I to this day, I believe it was an innocent mistake. Someone thought they were on hold. You heard one person say to another, dude, this is like watching paint dry. And of course it went out, but yet the presenter, I mean, maybe a little bit of a hesitation, but yet he just plowed on with no change in style. It was probably the worst case of that I've seen. All right. So I'd love to talk a little more about using breakout rooms. Not everybody may have Zoom rooms, but they're a great reason. And I don't know, are you using Zoom? I made an assumption there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we are.
Okay. So Zoom rooms are great. How are you, for those that maybe haven't used them, how are you getting the best use out of that in a breakout environment? Or do you have people that are in each of the breakouts helping direct them, or what's typical?
So what we do is, depending on the type of discussion or role play that we'll be breaking the teams out in, and depending on what roles we have during that class, because sometimes it's a mix, will really depend on how we'll do the breakout rooms. So the first thing is obviously, like, when we're doing these, it's because we want them to break into smaller groups, because having 70 people on one call makes it a little bit intimidating to start any kinds of discussions or get any personal practice in. So we do it two ways. There's one way where you can have just a complete mix. We try to be a little bit more tactful with who we put in the rooms and make sure that we've either got like a senior role model in each room or a manager in each room, just to make sure that, you know, it's guided. And depending on how complex the scenario is, we may even give the manager in that room a little script or guide to work off in terms of where we want the discussion to go. So the cool thing with Zoom breakout rooms is you can plan in advance how you want the rooms to break out as, or you can just do it automatically, or you can build them on the fly. But building them on the fly is a little bit more stressful when you're trying to present and do that at the same time. So pre-warning there for anyone that's trying to do that.
Now, what about all of those Zoom meetings or whatever online meeting tool someone may be using? How do you go beyond, as I believe you called it, death by virtual classroom?
Yeah, so there's a few things. This one's going to be really, really simple, but I think it's actually been really effective since we started doing it. So the first one is actually starting the conversation pretty much the same way we just did before, which is with icebreakers. sometimes when you just kind of let down the hair, you know, ask a fun question, it gets everyone just comfortable with the idea of talking to each other. And so then later in the training, when you're trying to, you know, create discussion points, you'll find that you get a lot more interaction. So that's been a really cool way just to kind of start off a session. Obviously, we use Zoom breakout rooms. And then on top of that, we do have a couple of other tools that we'll sometimes use. So one of my personal favorites is Kahoot. And this is like a quiz question entertainment game. So everyone can answer from their cell phones or from their computer. And so it's another way to just kind of like do some fun. Have you been listening? Did you get it? Let's check. And we do that through Kahoot. And then another idea is using Slido. Slido has a really cool feature where not only can you have them just asking questions live time, but also you can do word clouds. And so, you know, if you're wanting everyone to ideate or brainstorm together as a team virtually, Slido for word clouds has been a pretty great, a great way to do that. And then a few other tips and tricks we've done is I've kind of gone back to the basics. One of our cultural induction trainings, we have everyone draw like how Algolia helps customers. And so we get some really fun drawings that the new hires get to do. And they take
a photo. You mean literally draw like Pictionary?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, like
cool.
Pictionary. It's kind of another ice-breaking, like fun thing for them to do just to get to know each other and break down those walls. But we get some really fun pictures in the Slack channel as a result of it. So that's been a really fun one. But I have done the same thing for whiteboarding a concept. So if you're into whiteboarding during training sessions, this is a really good one that they can just do with a pen and paper and a, you know, iPhone to post it in the Slack channel. And then the very, very last one that I really like is I've done mock calls where I get them to go on mute and then ring my cell phone and leave a prospect voicemail. So for, you know, BDRs or SDRs and for AEs that are just practicing getting that elevator pitch down, it's a really good way to just kind of put them on the spot and get them to practice.
For the benefit of anyone out there who maybe has, I've used Kahoot. I haven't used Slido in the way that you're talking about. So for anybody that might be interested in trying that, are there freemium versions of these tools or is it something they need to get some budget for?
Yes, yeah, Slido does have like a freemium model. But depending on how many people you're going to invite in, you may need to pay like a little premium there.
Now, the whiteboarding concept. It sounds like you're talking about actually doing the whiteboarding, you know, you said, you know, on a pen and paper or maybe a small whiteboard and then sending a picture over. Have you ever tried the whiteboarding function in Zoom? And if so, what do you think of it?
I am terrible at drawing with a mouse. So it's personally not my favorite. So that's why I've kind of gone back to the old school. But if you've tried it, I'd love to know more.
No, I'm lucky if I can draw a circle and the two ends meet. You know, even in my days when I was selling, I would much rather be at a whiteboard rather than doing my opening pitch at a meeting rather than, you know, putting up slides. But I knew better than try to draw anything that wasn't lines. So,
yeah, you and I both.
All right. With the remote work environment that everyone's in, how are you enabling coaching in real time for these reps? Because as you said, you know, a lot of the natural interaction and side-by-side time and that sort of thing just isn't there right now.
Yeah, so we've been doing some call manager enablement. So we recently, last year, got Chorus.ai. So if anyone's heard of those, Chorus, Gong.io, they're conversational intelligence tools that will record the rep with a customer or a prospect. And we basically utilize that to get the AEs when they're going to those team meetings. We might have a topic like, you know, show us where you identified pain. And so then everyone will bring like a little snippet and then the managers will utilize that to like kind of drive their coaching session with their team. And it's really cool because, you know, A, have to be a little bit vulnerable just to bring those to your manager. But then it's been really cool to see the teams kind of like self-coach each other as well, based upon their experience. So that's been one way we've been doing some ongoing coaching from afar. Also with those tools, it's really great because a manager at any time can pop in, review the call and leave live notes in the tool for the AE as well. So it doesn't just always have to be a team setting. And what we've been doing is we do find themes through utilizing the analytics within those tools, and they kind of give us a blueprint to how we do our ongoing enablement. And it really becomes that North Star for us at Algolia. So when we see like a reoccurring theme, like, you know, maybe the word discount is coming up a little bit more often than normal, then we might want to do more objection handling. So that's been super helpful for us to make sure that we're providing the right kind of value and the right kind of training. And then the last thing that we kind of do is we want to ensure that what we're training is really sinking in. And so by utilizing those kind of tools, we can really listen for the metrics and make sure, you know, more engaging questions are asked or better research is done. So recently we had a whole theme last month for curiosity. And, you know, we taught about like how if you do your research really well, then you should be able to ask better and more engaging questions as a result and really connect better with your prospect or your customer. And so we would measure that through that tool to make sure that our training had actually sunk in. Were there more engaging questions asked? Was the listening time higher because the prospect should be talking more, the customer should be talking more? And, you know, was sales navigated on LinkedIn, was that search going up as a result of them, you know, going and doing more research on their prospects before they connect with them?
I have a couple questions about that. I think most people are familiar with Gong, Chorus, Refract. There's a number of great platforms out there. But the thing that I'm curious to hear is I would see a potential for salespeople to view a platform like that as more of a big brother play rather than an asset for them. How did you roll it out and manage that adoption process so that they actually felt okay about it?
Yeah, so I think people only see it that way if a manager makes it seem that way. And so I think it starts with really getting the management team on board with how you want them to utilize this tool to add value. And so the way that we presented this tool to the AEs is this is actually going to be a tool that helps you with your productivity and also is going to bring you more value. I like using analogies a lot. So, you know, if you want to be a really good soccer player, you know, what do soccer players do to beat their competition and to become better? They watch videos of themselves. They watch videos of their competition. And this is kind of the same thing. If you want to be a really good professional in sales, you need to understand what you're doing and what you're doing when you're talking to prospects, because that's what's going to make you better. And, you know, as a coach for a soccer player, they do the same thing and they coach their team members. And that's what we really encouraged our managers to do. And the moment that managers don't provide value and don't review those calls to like help make them better is when they don't see the point in the tool and where they'll see it as the big brother. And also it's just like, you know, you don't want to reprimand anyone for that kind of tool. Like, you know, everyone's human, everyone's going to make mistakes. And the idea is to get better. So that's how we rolled it out.
So it sounds like you have a culture that also encourages that. As you said, everyone makes mistakes. If you're not making mistakes, you're not getting better. So let's talk about your culture a little bit more. With onboarding, how do you go about, again, remotely, go about creating that that cultural learning that I think we'd all agree comes naturally when they're together and they're interacting with other folks in the company, just you know, in the hallway, in the break room, et cetera? How are you finding a way to do that in a social distancing environment? Culture's tough.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, at Algolia, we have five values. There's trust, grit, candor, humility, and care. And we've really made it a really important part of whatever content we've built for onboarding, that we thread these values into our daily interactions and also through any online content that we build. So you talked about before, you know, with Chorus, you know, how do you get that buy-in? And it's because we have a candor culture, and it comes because like we want to give that honest feedback because we really care, and we want our reps to have humility to put up their hand and ask for that feedback because they genuinely want to get better. And so as we do this in our onboarding process, we instill our teams with, you know, the value of care by showing stories of, you know, how we've gone above and beyond for customers, and also times where we could have done a lot better. And, you know, having that honesty and openly communicating these stories imparts a dedication towards humility, grit, and care. That's really been like a really big first step to how we've kind of encouraged these values. And as a result, I think, like, as we're going through these like evaluations as well, we're also embedding that same candor with our feedback. So they're really learning our culture by, you know, seeing us really like elevate those and put them in front of them and going like, hey, this is how you become an Algolian, and you know, and this is what we want to see in you as an Algolian as well. And I think it's so important. Like you said, it's such a hard thing to teach, and it becomes invaluable to have it.
That sounds like a great culture. It really does. Mm. When you were talking about the exercises and giving direct feedback, I agree that the candor, the care, I like that. But it mm-hmm. might be a new experience for some folks. They may not have come from a culture like that. If somebody is trying, or someone listening wants to maybe implement a little more of that into their program, any recommendations?
Well, I think Coaching 101, one thing that I've felt always worked really well is let them first self-evaluate before you share how you feel. So I always start anything off with, you know, how did you think you went? And what would you, like, what did you do well, and what would you do differently? And that kind of gives you a level of sense of how aware they are. And then I think, like, that's the first step, is you kind of mirror that. And when you mirror someone, I think it makes them a little bit more comfortable. So candor is a really hard one to get, but as long as they see it as coming from a place of care, usually, you know, there's not a pushback from you sharing those kind of that kind of feedback. So that would be, I think, like a first step if you're, you know, trying to give feedback and being really candid with someone, is you tell them why you want them to be better and how you're going to help them get there.
One of the other things that we talked about as we prepared to have this conversation was using online social to help folks get to know their managers and their teammates. Can you talk a little bit about that? That could get awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, social distancing doesn't equally mean like being socially distant, right? And so we're a month into social lockdown for most places, and many companies are trying to spotlight socializing online. And so for a new hire, I agree, it's really important that they get to know their teammates. And so there's simple gestures like having those virtual coffees. We've had virtual workouts, which has been quite fun. We've even had virtual meditation hours. And we've had our virtual happy hours, of course, as well. Extra emphasis on the happy. we, you know, those have been like really good, again, like moments with our new hires. We've even got our first ever online graduation party happening for our first class of new hires during COVID, which is going to be quite fun. And that's happening next week. So it's just a giving someone a platform to learn who they're working with and learn that culture. But yeah, I definitely think there can be a line, right? So we keep our happy hours to the hour, because otherwise they can go into some very interesting online karaoke sessions, which I've also seen.
Yeah, so you're not Facebook stalking your manager. That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's good. This has been fantastic, and thank you again. And I always like to end on a question that to help others maybe that are somewhere along the path that you're already gone down a little ways. And as you look back, what is the biggest thing that you feel like you understand now that you wish you'd known when you were getting started?
That's a really good question. For me, it's not being afraid to not know something and to go out of your realm to learn something. So, you know, I have made an effort to really create a network for myself. And I wish I had done it earlier in my career, because I'm sure I probably would have been somewhere completely different by now if I had. But, you know, it's really, really hard to start. But reaching out to another enablement professional and saying like, hey, you're in enablement, I'm in enablement, would you love to grab a coffee? And asking them, you know, if they've been doing enablement for longer than you have, asking them, you know, what have they learned and what would they do differently? They're very similar question to how you asked me. And I think the more of those kind of coffees and settings that you put yourself in and meet external mentors, not just mentors within your company, I think the stronger you become in terms of knowledge, if you're really passionate about an enablement career. And so that's something I wish I had done sooner, but it's something that I've definitely started doing, and I'm going to continue doing because I want to continue to learn.
Thank you. This has been a great conversation, but we are about half an hour in, so it looks like it's time to bring it to a close. So thank you very much, Lish. We appreciate it. I'm sure people are going to... I've learned some things, so I'm sure that the folks that are listening will have done as well. So we encourage you to come back every month for a new episode of Stories from the Trenches. You can find Stories from the Trenches on all your favorite podcast platforms, such as Apple, Spotify.
Thanks for joining this episode of Stories from the Trenches. For more sales enablement resources, be sure to join the Sales Enablement Society at www.sesociety.org. That's www.sesociety.org.